that I try to envision a future outside the Eurozone.
I want to thank you for being with us. Theodoros Kariotis, sociologist, activist, has been participating in grassroots movements protesting austerity in Greece, speaking to us from Thessaloniki. This is Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with guest host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is founder of the grassroots organization Know Your Rights in Education, Sheila Warren, who will be speaking at tonight's Portland Parents Union meeting.
Hi, this is John Shuck, host of Religion for Life. My guest this week is Nicole Garcia. She is a transgender Latina of faith, the first transgender person of color to seek ordination in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. It is time, beloveds, to make the church queer on Religion for Life. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
Some people look, some people stare, some people turn away, stumbling over words.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 12th annual PDX Pop Now Festival, July 24th through 26th at Audio Cinema in Portland. PDX Pop Now includes a record fair, street fair, and two outdoor stages with performers such as Amber Moon, Blue Cranes, Long Knife, Mike Crenshaw, Nurses, The Stops, and many more. That's PDX Pop Now, July 24th through 26th at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 35th Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, July 17th, 18th, and 19th. The festival is free and family friendly and runs from 5 to 10 p.m. Friday, noon to 10 p.m. Saturday, 1 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Sunday. The festival is sponsored by the Jazz Society of Oregon, a nonprofit arts organization. This year, we'll have performances from Haley Newsringer, Robert Moore Orchestra, Paul Creighton Project, a tribute to Stevie Wonder, Alan Jones Academy of Music, Kung Pao Chickens, Portland Youth Jazz Orchestra, LaRonda Steele, the Guitar Masters Finale with Lloyd Jones, Norman Sylvester, Michael Osborne, Jerry Burkholder, and Ben Rice. This is going to be under the St. John's Bridge on the east side of the Willamette River. We'll be broadcasting live from KBOO 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM, all day Saturday. Tune in.
It's 8:02 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm Lisa Loving. And today, if community characteristics are strongly associated with student achievement, then efforts to improve student performance must focus on the community as a whole, not just on a given school. We are joined this morning, it's a pleasure to be joined this morning, by Sheila Warren, the founder of the Portland Parents Union. Sheila, thanks again for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is a pleasure and a joy to be here to talk about our efforts.
The Portland Parents Union is a grassroots organization offering all sorts of trainings to families and moms and kids, but also forgive me for just interjecting, like what I see with the Portland Parents Union. Sheila, you guys also back up families that are having struggles within the system. And it just seems to me like you basically back up some of the people who are the least empowered. Can you talk a little bit, first of all, about the Portland Parents Union? What do you do? And then there's an important event tonight at Concordia University. It's a Know Your Rights in Education training. And I want to just ring that bell several times. But Sheila, talk about the work that you guys do and why do you do it? Where'd it come from?
Well, where it came from is, you know, like any social justice grassroots campaign starts is because you've been impacted yourself. And that's how it got started. I was impacted, my family in a school that wasn't so nice with us, the school and the teachers. And so rather than sue, people said, you should sue. I said, no, we'll just, you know, if the system can get away with not supporting me and my family when I know how to navigate the system, then there's a lot of families and students that don't know how. And so I thought, well, I'm going to start a union for parents. And that's how it got started. And it was 2009. That's how it got started. We started as an advocacy group. And I'm saying that to say that we started thinking that we could advocate for the families and show up for the families, and thinking that the resources and services we would plug into other organizations that do a lot of training and do things for families. We thought that. We went to visit a lot of groups and said, you know, we want to plug in our families to your resources. We just want to be an advocate. We just need resources so we can know where to refer the family. If you're doing trainings, we want to refer the families to those trainings. And what we found out is that people aren't willing. Some of the organizations, we are so siloed, we don't want to work together. So suddenly we found that we needed to have our own trainings and our own resources and services and go out ourselves and find them ourselves. We did find a group called Dignity of Schools, which is a national group, which supports us, has been sort of, they started in 2009 also, which have supported us forever. And so that's how we got started. We didn't know what our issue would be, our campaign. We just know we would advocate for kids and families. And suddenly we started getting these calls. And that first call I got was from a parent whose child had been home for 6 months because the child had been kicked out, suspended out of school. And I always say kick out, had been kicked out of school, and mom didn't know what to do. And she was a working mother, and suddenly the school sent this child home. Mom was working, didn't even know this was happening, and she came home, and there was her child. And the child was out for 6 months because mom didn't know and was embarrassed and felt alone and didn't know what to do. So that's how we got started. The issue of push out and suspensions and expulsions found us. And so ever since then, it's huge. It's a huge process. And at that time, it was becoming an epidemic. And so that's all the work we do, because we get calls all the time from families who have been minimized and treated pretty bad. So that's how it got started.
I want to go back. Is it the Dignity in the Schools campaign? What is that called again? I'm not saying that right.
It's DSC is the acronym, and it's Dignity in Schools campaign.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When I first met you a few years ago, you were showing me what school push out is. I didn't even know what that was.
Right.
And I did some reporting on this, wrapping around a family of, he was just like a preschooler, a kindergarten student, who was consistently being pushed out of his elementary school. And when I turned around to look at some of the research, I want to say Harvard or Yale, some big educational institution had done major research in how specifically African American students are more pushed out than others, and they did a study about preschoolers that were suspended and kicked out, and I didn't even know that preschoolers could be suspended. I mean, can you just talk a little bit about, because school push out is bedrock behind what you do. Mm-hmm. Can you just explain what school push out is?
It's pretty hard. It's pretty common sense thing. It's just we're talking about suspension, expulsions. We're talking about a child being labeled, and we're talking about when a child, especially a black boy, starts school. And we talk about police profiling. Well, I usually talk about profiling in schools. That's where it starts. Push out is just meaning that a child is you know, we say kicked out, but pushed out of school because of huge behaviors that, you know, adults will, because of adult judgment. And so there are rules, you know, there's a discipline handbook that says if a child does this, if a child does that, then they need to be suspended or kicked out of school, especially for, around fighting. But what we've found is most of the children, when you look at the data, it's not serious stuff. It's insubordination. It's subjective stuff. It's not even serious stuff. So a child might talk back to a teacher and they're suspended.
Or not want to sit in his chair.
Whatever. But what happens is, what we look at, what we started looking at is referrals and how many referrals a child gets, because that's an indicator that, you know, a child could be kicked out of school or suspended or sent home. And sometimes what the school has done is send a child home for half a day and not record the data. So that's the piece that we are always looking at around, you know, what that is. But suspension is just meaning, and after a while, if a child is minimized and labeled, then sometimes they just drop out of school. And so that's under the umbrella of push out too, that kids just quit school or drop out. Or parents get frustrated because they're really tired of every time they go to the child goes to school, that they're demonized, minimized. And we've had parents who've lost jobs because they get phone calls every day, and they've lost jobs because the job is like, well, you're getting these phone calls and aren't sympathetic with the process that's going on with this family. So I'm answering that question correctly.
It's true. This is Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO. This is Voices from the Edge. You're used to Joanne Hardesty being here this morning. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm sitting in. We're also joined by Deb Meyer from the Portland Deborah Mayer from the Portland Parents Union. And I just want to just underline what Sheila was just explaining about this issue of school push out, where kids get referrals, they get suspensions, they get kicked out of school, and then they end up behind in school over time. And the U.S. Department of Education, I think a few years ago, also declared this a major national issue and said that this is part of what's really driving the dropout rate. And when you look at our school dropout rates here in Oregon, we have some of the worst, we have the worst dropout rates in the nation, basically. And so if we're looking at how to stem that, how do you begin to address it? It's keeping kids in school, giving kids, even, you know, one of the issues people have been talking about is in-school suspension, you know.
Right.
So just literally, it is amazing to me how also a few years ago, the Oregonian did, Betsy Hammond, an Oregonian reporter, did a big report about how many schools in the state just really didn't hardly make any effort to deal with their truancy issues. And so, again, it's an issue all over the state, but we're specifically finding that specifically African-American families are disproportionately affected. And I think Latino families on a really significantly less so, but it is a huge issue. And Deb, can you talk a little bit about the work that you do with the Parents Union? Yeah, I know I'm putting you on the spot. This is live radio. Deb, what's going on with you? What do you see and what do you do with the organization?
Well, I'm not accustomed to being on radio, first of all, because I like to work behind the scenes. But I think the work that Sheila does is really important because when these kids do get pushed out of school, they don't have the resources that teachers have, or the administration, or anybody else in the school system. So what Sheila has done is stepped up to support families who wouldn't have anybody else, to help them work with the administration, work with the teachers, to find a way to keep kids in school.
And listeners, what are we doing around education? How do we make it work for everyone? The phone number to call is 503-231-8187. Talking with the Portland Parents Union. Sheila, so tonight you have your monthly Know Your Rights event.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always Know Your Rights in Education? And what are you going to be talking about tonight?
Well, we said Know Your Rights in Education because there are other Know Your Rights clinics going on with the police profiling and with people's rights around when police stop them, or, you know, and profiling. And so we said education rights. We been doing a Know Your Rights Circle with parents for years, and you know, within our system, within our, we have what's called a Second Wednesday, where we have a circle where families come in and talk to each other about their issues, and then and sometimes once a year at least, we have someone come in from the Civil Rights Division, from the Oregon Department of Education, Civil Rights Department, disability rights lawyer, and other folks come in and talk to our families about their rights. And so we've been doing this. And so how this came about was, we have a lawyer, his name is John Solois, and he's been working with us. He's wanted to show up with our IEPs, and he said, Sheila, I want to do a youth law clinic. And it just so happened that the day Deb was and I were talking about the NECN grant that was going out, and I'm like, oh, we can put those together.
That's the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods. Yeah, so you're getting some Coalition. Support out there, which
yes,
is awesome.
Go yes. On. And so we took this idea, and I said, well, we can combine John's clinic, the NECN grant and their requirements, and our Know Your Rights clinic that we've always done, and do a and do a process. And so Deb is Parent Union's grant writer. She writes our grants. And so so we did it. We said, okay, we'll do it. And so it ended up being a Know Your Rights clinic, and the Neighborhood Association loved it, because now we can take this information to the communities, especially the Northeast and North communities, you mm-hmm. know. And so that was the reason behind it, and why we were, why we had wanted to do the clinics. Now tonight, I'm loving it, because the education clinic, when we're at IEPs, it's important for us to show up at a child's individual education plan hearing, or sometimes they're being, it's called a placement hearing, where they want to kick the child out and expel them, conditional expulsions, to send them to an alternative school, which is called Pioneer. And so what we have to do when we go in, we have to really know what the laws are and what the rights are, you know. And so sometimes we're just meeting the parent when we show up at the hearings, you know. And so somehow we get to the parent to say, this is your rights, this is what you need to do. And so the Know Your Rights Clinic is the best way to do that, is have parents come in. The other piece is the community needs to know. They need to know. We get a lot of criticism. We don't get a whole lot of support around talking about suspension expulsions, because everywhere we go, people say if kids are bad, then they deserve to be kicked out. Even the system is doing that, obviously, because we are, and the PPS claims that they're doing great work, and I believe they are, because I'm watching it. But also, I tell them, I said, you can look at that all you want to, but I'm getting phone calls every day from these families. And so you can't prove it by me that things are being reduced. You see it on paper, but you can't prove it by me because I'm in the schools all the time, every day, with these families.
And just to backtrack a little bit, listeners, we're talking about just the deep weeds. We're in the weeds of education. You're a mom, you're a dad, you've got kids in the school. Your kid maybe doesn't have some kind of education problem, but maybe your kid gets flagged by a teacher or an administrator and put on what's called an independent education plan, right? An IEP. And so now you've got some kind of a sanction over you and your kid, which is complicated. It's one thing if you're criticized as a parent, but when someone's throwing shade on your kid, that makes it even more complicated. It's almost like it becomes almost like an emotional issue. Like, how do I make sure my kid is being treated right? And I know people, all kinds of people whose kids have disabilities, kids who are in special ed, really struggle with this stuff. And maybe some of the issues sometimes are these rules even uniformly used? But listeners, you know, the number to call, if you've got something to say, or if you've got an experience, maybe you need an advocate. What situation are you in? I'm thinking of a certain former health teacher at Grant High School who is now suing the district and claiming that he was not treated right. And yet there's so much more to that story. Say, for example, if you're a teenage girl that was in this health class and you were called or texted at home by this teacher, what are your rights, right? Even after the fact, right? 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And we do have a caller. Joanne, what's going on? What do you think?
Well, first of all, will you please be patient with me? I don't take my pains, my body acting up, and I'll try to get my words out as best as I can. But anyway, yeah, bullying. I guess the schools aren't really doing anything real about stopping or whatever bullying. Number two, parent support. If they had, your parents are so big. If they had parent support groups for parents whose children are having problems in school, I wonder if that would help. But I guess that's not a good idea. But anyway, number three, special education. I guess they're putting those children out, suspending them and kicking them out too when I get off the air so I can take care of my pain. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Joanne. Always, again, putting some of the hottest pots there on the stove. Sheila, you know, I have a history with you, too, and I've covered some of the things that you have been dealing with. And then mm-hmm. there's some stories that I haven't even covered because yes. there are so many stories. Mm-hmm. One in particular I'm thinking of, and it has to do with a vice principal at a local high school who put a teenage girl in a chokehold, and there's a photograph of it. Someone basically took a picture of that, and it made me look at these issues of, I mean, I don't want to necessarily judge that case, but what about students that are bullied by the adults? You know, so you're dealing with not just kids dealing with each other, but how the system deals with the kids. What can parents do? And it's really hard to know what your rights are or how you should proceed. Like you said, should you sue or not? It seems like that's the option. Can you talk a little bit about where restorative justice comes in? Because you were one of the first people I ever heard even use that term about education.
Well, restorative justice is easy, but it's complicated because of funding and money and trying to get enough people everywhere. And it's new enough, and it's a paradigm shift where people are rejecting it. Either they love it or they hate it. And restorative justice is just bringing the folks who have harmed and the person who has been harmed together and do some reconciliations and making agreements with each other and being able to talk out and talk through what has happened to each other and bringing families in along with them, and teachers, and sometimes even in classrooms and where the whole classroom has been impacted by students who've, you know, maybe been fighting each other or bullying or whatever. So it's just a circle healing process where people come together, you know, the people that have been harmed come together and start having those conversations and walk away with agreements. And they might walk away still not liking each other, the students, but they have some kind of agreement or how they're going to treat each other and how they're going to be in the same environment. Mm-hmm. And families are, and where we can't come in is the families, is the parents and families, and making sure they're okay also, you know, because sometimes the students are walk away feeling good and having an agreement, but the parents still aren't. Sometimes walk away and not have any kind of agreement. So that's the piece.
Literally, you're trying to stop and make everybody stop and make friends. Even if you're not making friends, make a connection like we should be doing in society. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
What we should have learned from day one. But that's mm-hmm. not. Sometimes I feel like, and this has been said many times, is that, you know, kindergarten, elementary school is all about getting kids to sit down and shut up, making kids to learn to sit down and shut up. And maybe mm-hmm. that, maybe it should be something more than that.
Yes.
And we do. Do we have another caller? George. We have George on the phone. George, what's going on with you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and I appreciate the discussion this morning. But I got to say, it kind of, when I first started to listen to it, it kind of provoked a little bit of a visceral response because I'm a teacher, you know, and I just want to know, I mean, like on the other side of this, if you're in a classroom, if you imagine a scenario where you've planned like all your weekend planning a lesson for class and you go in there and you start to run it and then somebody tells you to F yourself and won't do it. I mean, what do you do other than give that kid an office referral and get him out of there? What do you do with the other 29 kids that are looking at you? Like, what are you going to do about it? You know, what happens in those situations? I know, I mean, it's terrible when kids get left behind or fall through the cracks, and you know, that's a horrible problem. But on the other end of this, like, when you're trying to teach a group of kids and somebody is totally defiant or out of control or throwing their chair around, or, you know, getting crazy, what are you going to do about that? How can you not give them an office referral, and how can you not, in some cases, kick those guys out?
George, does that happen a lot in your classroom?
No.
Okay. No, seriously. The thing, one of the things,
but
I'm so glad you called,
though.
It
happened a lot, you know?
One of the things that gets me sometimes is that, you know, my husband used to be a teacher in the public schools, and I feel as if the principal of his school front-loaded his class with the kids that were the most difficult students that would not sit down and shut up, and it was because he was a male teacher. And there was a system where, like, some of the more senior female teachers literally had the power to get those difficult performing kids out of their classroom, and then they all got segregated into one room and all punished a lot. It's like, in other words, George, I feel like I'm not sure that the system really works. And I see where I've seen where another friend of mine, she's a substitute teacher at a private school, okay, in Portland, and she had this experience earlier. This at the end of the spring here, beginning of the summer, it was literally like the last day of school, and she was a substitute, and the teacher who had been there basically left her a test. She had to give the students a test on the last day of school, and they revolted, and she didn't know what to do. But she said, "God, I could totally relate to them, but I couldn't. I had to do what I was asked to do, which was take each student that was fighting out in the hallway and talk to them about what they had done wrong." And then when she turned around and came in, it turned out one of the students had taken a picture of her rear end or whatever, and they were circulating it around. It just, to me, it seems like, I'm not sure about the system. And I totally, although I completely relate to what you're saying, you know, yes. What do you do? But, and I wish you could stay on the line, because I wish I could ask you a few more questions about, like, what would be your best case scenario. But I wanted to give Sheila a chance to respond, because I completely appreciate where you're coming from, George. But can you respond a little? I mean, what should be happening, Sheila?
Thank you, George, for calling. I appreciate that. This is what I hear all the time from teachers, and we're very sympathetic with that, and we understand, and it is a system. And for me, you know, that's the work that I do is dependent on the teachers and us building relationships with the teachers and trying to figure out how we can work together. When we're in meetings and IEP meetings and other group meetings, the first thing we do is make sure that we're all taken care of in the room and building that relationship. We come in sometimes with distrust because the system does not allow sometimes teachers to have enough time to prepare or have enough time to even be in a hearing with families that, you know, need to be supported and treated with dignity. So our role is, we want to work with teachers because we always hear that from teachers, and we get that, we understand that. And so somehow we have to figure out how we can work together to create that process. It can't be us and you, you know, teachers and parents. And so that's the piece for me. If you know me, I love to connect folks, and we try to sit down with PAT all the time to say we can't do it without the teachers, because the teachers are impacted as much as sometimes the students and families. You're impacted the most by the system, almost. And so somehow we have to figure that out. So I hope that answers your question. Sometimes I'm a kumbaya person and saying, let's just all get along and figure out how we can come together, because we understand that if you're trying to have a classroom of 29, 35 kids, and that's the other thing, we need to lower class sizes. And so that's the piece that, you know, we're all in a dilemma and we're all being impacted. And so we all need to just figure out how to come together.
Well, that's certainly the case. And it'll be, you know, it's difficult to find solutions, but the only solutions that can be found will be by working together.
Yes.
And so I'm all for that. Well, thank you so
much.
You're
welcome.
And I'll hang up and let you guys get back.
Look me up sometimes, George.
The Portland Parents Union, you can find them on Facebook, doing some real grassroots stuff there to make it available for people to participate. And, you know, and I'm so glad George called, because
I
wanted to ask George, you know, how can we support what you do? And I'm remembering that I just had the privilege to interview Ronnie Herndon a couple months ago before I left my recent job, my reporting job. And he talked about, he's the former national president of Head Start. He's the founder, I believe, of Albina Head Start here in Oregon. It's the biggest and most successful Head Start program. And Head Start is an early childhood education. It's more than that, or early childhood education. Head Start, what makes it successful, what makes it important and unique, is that it wraps around the whole family. And the school district, I think that the public school system is limited in its ability to wrap around the whole family, in part because of our, again, the system and who built the system of education in this country, and how the federal government, in my opinion. Again, I don't know how we can solve all these problems on the local level, because I feel personally that some of them were created at the federal level, where you have conservative Republicans creating these education policies, passing them down through Congress, and then often Democrats and liberals on the local level having to try to make these policies work. No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, et cetera, standardized tests. We haven't even talked about that. And George, I mean, one of the things that Ronnie Herndon talked about is the place that we start screwing everything up is the way we train teachers. And teachers should be apprenticed like electricians and engineers. They should be apprenticed to people who are successful in getting their classroom together and educating, you know, to whatever standards we have. But that we don't do that. We educate people and just throw them in the swimming pool and say, boom, you're law enforcement in the classroom. It's interesting to me to see, too, how vice principals are used on the at middle school and high school level. They are like law enforcement. And I was just talking about this vice principal at a local high school with a headlock. But I mean, how, my question about that was, are these vice principals getting use of force training? And why are we even putting them in the position where they think they need to put someone in a headlock? And in that case, allegedly, a school police, how do you call it? A school police resource officer, some of whom, I really love some of these school police resource officers. Some of them I see doing fabulous work. But in this case, the guy basically told these two teenage girls who had had a feud, well, you're just going to have to sort it out after school in the alley. And that's 1950s talk. And that's how this whole thing, instead of saying, you know what, you have a conflict, let's hook you up with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And that's part of where that came from. I have had too much coffee. I can tell I'm talking too much. Listeners, you have a piece of this conversation. Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Don't wait till the end of the hour and everyone call at once, because I know that's what you're thinking right now. But I mean, what, listeners, do you have a big solution to how we on the grassroots level can make the education system work? Because the system sort of does not work. 503-231-8187. Sheila, the other piece of this that strikes me is, because I know you and I know your work a little bit, we're talking about education, but some of these issues, they bleed over into other areas such as gentrification, employment, housing, even incarceration. Can you talk a little bit about how what you're doing on the with the education is impacts some of these other issues, or how they're connected?
Well, you know, one of the first word that comes out of my mouth is prevention, you know, prevention, catching a child who might have an issue early on. You know, you mentioned Ron Herndon and Head Start, and we just had a parent recently whose child has autism and was kicked out of Head Start. And not because people were vindictive, it's just because the employers or the teachers or whoever did not have enough training or didn't understand. And so that's one of the things. But one the piece that we're calling it labeling and tracking. As soon as a child starts school, Head Start or whatever, you know, and I have to tell you, most of our calls have been this last year were kids in kindergarten, Head Start, first grade. Okay. Those are the calls, you know, preschool, those are the calls. And kids are just starting kindergarten and they're being kicked out. And we're like, what the heck is that? So what I'm saying is that the kids are being labeled as, you know, it's adult, when you're talking about adult bullying, the whole system is about adult bullying, you know, for the kids. Because as soon as they get in there, there's rules and laws. And if you come in as a black kid, then you're automatically labeled as someone who's going to have behavior issues. How many phone calls have I had for parents who said, my child was labeled, and the teacher said that your child is this and your child is that, and the child has been set up, you know? So then you talk about tracking. So when you talk about tracking and when you talk about school-to-prison pipeline, if you go into prisons and talk to those African-American people of color, men of color, women of color, they, if you ask them, have they been suspended or expelled in the public school, they'll usually say yes, that they've had at least one suspension or expulsion in the school system. So if you know that data, and if you know by the time they get in third grade that, you know, people are pretty, you know, the things are pretty much set up on what it will look like for children in third grade, especially kids of color, and what that might look like when they start building prisons or they start, you know, there's all kinds of data and statistics around, you know, certain grades when you start looking at especially boys of color and the data, you know, how that's set up also to, from that helps support the school-to-prison pipeline. Hope I'm making sense. Supports the school-to-prison pipeline. So when we talk about profiling, one of my argument is that, and I've been to a lot of different groups and organizations and saying, can someone help us to do the prevention on profiling? Because there's a lot of interventions and a lot of gang task force and all those things to intervene in folks who are in trouble when they're already in prison, they're already in gangs, but there's no one who wants to be on the front end to help stop that. Because you can see, and I am not a data person, I'd have to look it up, and we hear so much data, but I'm speaking from experience. When you see, I have families who I've been with from first grade and now they're in high school. And the kids are still being labeled. We've been in there and saying, no, you're not going to do this to this child. And this child is, the one particular I'm talking about, is ready to drop out of school. He's in high school. And we've intervened from the beginning. We've had amazing principals and teachers who helped to intervene also. But his self-esteem is so much in the bucket. His self-love is not there because of how he's been set up all the time and how he's been labeled and how he's been taken out of a classroom and put in, you know, a behavior classroom. And you know, where they, you know, you said it earlier, where they house a lot of kids, especially black boys. One school had nothing but boys of color, and they threw a male teacher in there. And, you know, these kids just were in there to survive and thrive. And we got complaints about that. So the system, is there's all kinds of indicators. And I go back to the referrals. When you start looking at referrals, when a kid is in kindergarten and getting a referral, you know, and then, you know, what we push is the data we want to see is how many referrals a child is getting and find out what teacher is giving a lot of those referrals. And not to be upset with the teacher, but to maybe give that teacher some help or, you know, try to figure out how we can figure that out. But the referrals is an indicator to me. Referrals and the school climate and the training that the teachers have. We're talking about courageous conversations training. When I talk to the teachers, they're saying that we don't give enough tools to implement that. We're not understanding there's not enough training in schools. And like, as you said, it gets back to the training. And then what does it get back to? Well, we don't have the money to do it. Right. When we're pushing to have as many wraparound services as possible for this child. If a child is disrupting the whole school, then it is a good idea to, you know, make sure the child is getting the help that they need somewhere else, but making sure that the services are there for that child.
You know, too, I'm remembering when my kids are, like, graduating from college now, but I remember when they were in elementary school, at Sabin Elementary School, there were some wonderful classroom assistant teachers, right? Mm-hmm. And as George is talking about, like, you know, I have to juggle 30 units here. And if one of them's going to make everybody else fall, how do I deal with that? And I remember in particular one lady named Miss Lolly. I could name her whole name, but I won't. Love her so much. And she literally would be there to take that kid that was having a meltdown out into the hallway. And she would always talk to him in the nicest, or her, mm-hmm. in the nicest way. And that literally, it's like, it seems like it's not brain surgery. But this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. I'm Lisa Loving. We're talking with Sheila Warren and Deb Mayer from the Portland Parents Union. Their monthly Know Your Rights in Education training is tonight. It's at Concordia University Library from 6 to 9 p.m. And we've got a full slate of callers. Let's go see what's on people's mind. George is back. What's going on, George? Are you the same, George?
No, I'm the other George. But I want to say
we honor you.
Oh, thank you for the outstanding program. But I also want to mention a factor that I don't hear mentioned very much on KBOO, but it probably is from time to time. If you have a system that is coercing all of the people, and especially people of color, by lack of jobs, This is going to create dilemmas that don't look like lack of jobs until you say, well, what difference would it make if we had plenty of good jobs for everybody, especially people of color? And so I'd just like to ask your guest and you about that, and I'd want to thank you for an outstanding program, Lisa, and your guest.
Thanks, George.
I'll hang up. Bye.
Here's the thing, you know, when people, and maybe I'm misunderstanding what George said, but I remember years ago, the Oregon School Boards Association, I'm not the queen of school board huggers, you know, I'm not against school boards, but I'm not like a big rah-rah person, but they did a major study of economies in Oregon, and they found that in many, especially rural economies, but also urban economies, the school system was the biggest employer. So when the state started cutting back and cutting teachers, they were literally cutting the economy itself, which surprised me. And we saw that too with the janitors that were completely fired by the Portland Public Schools, was it 12, yes, 13 years ago, but those people had civil service jobs, and so the district ended up having to pay a few million dollars fine, but they did not get their jobs back. And I mean, kind of, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel what I hear George saying is squeezing the system down, cutting off the resources, making it so that the classrooms themselves don't have an adult in them. Maybe that's a part of it too, because some of these kids should be teachers. They should be thinking about being teachers, but it's really as many people who want to be teachers anymore. That's a tough road to hoe. I don't know if you want to respond to that, Sheila. You're not necessarily making a big jobs analysis, but I do want to say, I think these issues do impact jobs.
Well, I interpreted it was that because you mentioned people of color, and so I would have to ask him. I'm not sure what that meant, because I went somewhere else with that statement.
Oh, okay.
And trying to figure out if he meant jobs more jobs for people of color, more jobs for people who need jobs. And if he's going that way, I think the system, we push back, you know, everything is academic and college oriented, you know, go to college. And I'm one who's an artist, and my family's an artist, and my children don't want to go to college, formal college. They want to go to film school or art school, or they want to trade. And so So the system fails in that way when they keep pushing that academic process, and you need to go to college, you need to take AP classes so you can go to college. And there's a lot of kids out there who are very creative, like the school called Da Vinci School. It's an art school, and my grandchild went there, who's an artist, who says, I'm weird, Grandma, and I need some place where I can get the education I need. So she went to Da Vinci, where artists are, it's a weird school. There people are artists, they're creative.
And it's an arts magnet school.
Arts magnet school, and love it. And now she's in an arts high school out in Milwaukee. She had to get out of the system just to go to a high school that she wanted to thrive, could thrive in. So what I'm saying is, when you're talking about jobs, the system has failed us in making sure that the students are equipped to get the job. Not everybody wants to go to college, and that's what they promote. So in that case, you know, that's what George is talking about, then we need to push that a little bit more.
I think it's interesting what he said, coercive system, basically, that maybe hinges on a lack of jobs or a lack of people staffing these things. But maybe I misunderstood what George was saying. But still, anyway, we are really ringing the bell of the Portland Parents Union event tonight at the Concordia University Library. I'll look up the address for that in a second. It's from 6 to 9 p.m., and they're doing your Know Your Rights training around education. And although I think it's an interesting thing when people reach out and try to educate themselves about their family, because really most people that are in the soup with their kids don't reach out. Mm-hmm. They feel alienated, and they feel like the system's never going to work for them. As far as people going to college, also anymore, there are definitely people saying, I don't think I can handle a $50,000 debt,
yes,
to get this, mm-hmm, degree and whatever. So anyway, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And we are going to go back to the phone lines. We have Greg on the phone. What are you thinking about today, Greg?
I'm a parent of a child now. He's grown. He's 23. He has disabilities. And we started off in the Beaverton area, and we didn't get a diagnosis. And I'd say for any parent that has any suspicions, contact a physician that has developmental backgrounds, so that having that diagnosis is just a one to have in your pocket, so that you have a legal standing for sure. And then we found that early intervention was very helpful. Our child didn't get a diagnosis until he was about three, and he could have, we could have probably identified it earlier if we would, but known more, but we didn't. We had some troubles with Beaverton School District. And so they had what they call contained classrooms, where all the kids with disabilities are all in one classroom. We found that for our child, that system would only create more modeling of the wrong kind of behaviors around him. So we wanted him in a regular classroom where we have normal kids modeling for him, because that's what he would do. He would watch the other kids and then do what they do. So we ended up moving to the Tiger Tualatin School District, and on the recommendation of a friend who had a special education master's, and she told us about that school district, and that worked out much better, as they were much more inclusive. And I'll have to say that my child never had any behavioral problems and was fairly well accepted. We always asked, when he was changing grades, which teacher wanted this child in their classroom. We didn't want to force him on someone that thought that, you know, because there was those folks that just didn't want to have a kid like that in their classroom. But there were other good teachers that did, and it worked out quite well. We had a fairly good experience all the way through high school, and afterwards he had vocational ed type of things for 4 years. What was part of our ace up our sleeve was my ex-wife was working for Oregon parent training. They're gone now.
OPTI.
And they were been around for 30 years.
What do you mean they're gone now? What do you mean?
The director was convicted of absconding with funds or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, the humanity. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, they were grant driven. She wrote the grants. She had the money, control of the monies and whatnot. And so I don't know, something like that.
All right, Greg, you've given us a lot to think about.
So now they are referring to a new parent training center called FACT.
FACT, yeah.
Family and Community Together. Can be reached at, have a number 888-98-FACT. Or their website's just FACT Oregon. I don't know much about them. We do.
Parent Union does work closely with FACT. We're partners with them.
I'm hoping they're as good or better than the Oregon PTI was.
They are.
And so I would suggest people do get all the help they can. And one other thing we learned, and maybe it's just simply because my ex-wife's expertise in the area, was that we never really tried to go head-to-head against the system. We always try to work for Alex's plan and try to make things work for him. We didn't want to butt heads with them, because guess who's behind them? The taxpayers' money is behind the legal system in the schools. They got some deep pockets to fight against. You want to take that challenge on, you should think twice about it, really. You should try and figure out how to finesse the system rather than battle the system, if you ask me.
All right, Greg. I just really want to thank you. We've got a bunch more callers, and right. I really do appreciate your time. And I hope you call again. Greg, you're blowing my mind. You got too much stuff on the table.
Things can go well for you. Think very positive and think what's best for your child.
Greg. Great. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Bye-bye.
The number to call, we're taking calls, 503-231-8187. It must be really hard sometimes to, as Greg said, work with the system and not battle the system. Because, again, when someone is doing something to your kid, you know what? cut your leg off, it grows its own legs, its own head. That's your kid. Your kid is you. So it's like, it's so hard. And I remember being bullied in school, the things that my mother did, things that my son went through in school. And it is really very difficult sometimes, especially as a mom, not to come out like a tiger. Right. And we do have another caller. Let's go back to the line. We have Dell's on the phone. What's going on, Dell?
Hey, good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
And thank you so much for the conversation. I just wanted to, you know, contribute a little bit. Earlier, you were speaking about the school to prison pipeline. And, you know, I just wanted to highlight the work that Morpheus Youth Project is doing in the community. Carlos Chavez, who, you know, has been working with the prison pipeline radio collective on Kikibu, has been going to high school and middle schools, especially in outer southeast Portland and Gresham, and also visiting youth in McLaren youth facility, and you know, try to make those connection of, you know, being out of school, you know, and then ended up in the prison system. And so he is starting those conversations even with youth on the inside and outside of the system, in order to you know, to really engage the youth also in this conversation around what's happening in the schools and how this is taking some of the youth to the prison. Because some of the conversation that he's had with the youth, and that have aired actually on Prison Pipe, I would, you know, encourage cable listeners to look for some of the recording of the McLaren youth voices on the cable archives, because they have, you know, themselves talked about their experience from starting in elementary school, middle school, being kicked out, and many of them being, right, of the Latino community, Black community. And I feel that there has to be a lot more work that is done from the schools, from the teachers, also to really educate yourself and themselves about the cultural differences, about, you know, all of these things that really seem to be like details, but that really matter a lot, including language barriers, right? I mean, one of the things that the youth in the prison told Carlos of Morpheus Youth Project, you know, whenever you're working with youth outside, work with their family as well. If you don't include the family in the conversation, that's not going to work. And he followed the advice of the youth, and he is having lots of great success with some of the youth that he mentors. And he mentors youth that are right on the verge of being kicked out of the school. The school is kind of bringing him in to try to, you know, keep these schools at the middle school level engaged. So, yeah, I just wanted to give him a shout out. If folks are not familiar with the work that he does, Morpheus Youth Project, .org, and folks can find out more about that.
Thanks for calling up, Del. Thanks for putting that down on the table, too.
Yeah.
Carlos Chavez, one of our really beloved colleagues here at KBOO, and that is MorpheusYouth.org. That's MorpheusYouth. youth.org. And if you just tuned in, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. I'm Lisa Loving. We are live in the studio with Sheila Warren and Deb Mayer from the Portland Parents Union. We're talking about their event tonight at the Concordia University Library from 6 to 9 p.m. It's a Know Your Rights and Education talk. Portland Parents Union does this every month. They'll have a special, it's the third Thursday at Concordia University Library, and that is in Northeast Portland. In a minute, I will look up the address. Do we have another caller? And we have Shannon on the line. Shannon, what's going on with you?
Hi, I'm 40 years old. I graduated IEP, and if it wasn't for an IEP, I would not be successful today. Thank goodness I had an IEP. It gave me a helping hand to college. I did not learn I was dyslexic until I was in seventh grade, and it was a drama teacher. They did not have tests like they have now. I know we don't want to label our kids, and a lot of parents don't want to get an IEP for their children because they feel like, oh, my God, my children has a learning disability. No, that's not what it is. And I'm so happy you guys are educating parents, because not every IEP is for a lazy, stupid child.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let me ask you one more thing, Shannon. Right now it's summer. There might be kids listening. Could you give a little advice right now to young people that might be in the same position that you were in when you were a kid? What should they be doing, and how can kids help themselves? Or you know,
for me, it was dyslexia. You know, if you learn a different way and your teacher doesn't get it, go talk to your counselor. Talk to them. If your parents aren't listening, talk to a grandparent. Talk to an uncle. Find somebody else in that family who learns the same way you do, especially if you are an audio learner. There's visual learners. There's different ways. The number one thing that helped me in school is the very first day of every single class, I went and I told the teacher I was dyslexic. This is how I learned best. How can we work together to get me to succeed? Mm-hmm. Honestly, I had some teachers who told me they weren't going to help me. And that's when you have to go get help. And you know what? You might not get an elective. You might have to have an extra study hall class. But I never did summer school. And nobody else has to.
Mm. All right. All right, Shannon. Thanks a lot for calling.
No, thank you, guys. Thank you.
Right on.
Have a great day.
You too. You too. I like hearing from people and people from their experience. My son's kind of dyslexic too, and he's been a double quadruple worker, and he has really put himself into a position he wants to be in because he knew what he wanted, and he did the extra effort to make that, but he still mixes up left to right, and he's getting a PhD right now. Amazing guy. You know, we're starting to think about the possibility of running out of show. I want to hand the floor one more time to Sheila Warren. And no. Let's put Deb on the line.
Yes.
Okay, Deb, I don't mean to put you. So, Deb, we already know you're the quiet behind the scenes person who is a grant writer. That tells me you know a little bit about the issue and the history of this organization. For people out there listening, right, what do you think is the most important thing that they should know about what the Portland Parents Union does? Because you must know if you're weaving this Afghan together. So what should people know?
Well, Portland Parent Union there is for families of children who are being pushed out at school. Sheila started Portland Parent Union years ago because she had a child who needed help, and there was nobody there to help her. So it really is an organic kind of organization that grew from real life situations. And then she saw that other people were having problems like she was. And then she just had the wherewithal to start this organization. So I think the work that she does is really important, and that's why I support her. I think we have lots of other things coming down the pike that are going to really help kids in trouble at school. I'm a former educator myself. I taught in a school where multiple intelligences were, well, actually, we were the first to put multiple intelligences into the classroom.
All the different ways people learn, just like what Shannon just said.
Right. And you know, the school climate of today that's been driven by a testing mentality has made it a lot more difficult on teachers. So that we can't do those kinds of things. And I think when we realize that it's not the kind of school that we went to, it's not the same kind of experience that we would like to give children. And there are reasons that our children are acting out.
And reasons why the kids are getting pushed out and dropping out.
Right.
Thanks for drawing the line under that. So, Sheila, we just have a couple minutes left. Can you just one more time talk about what's going to happen tonight at Concordia University from 6 to 9 p.m. with the Know Your Rights in Education event?
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun, for one thing. We're going to do a lot of interactions and role-playing. We're going to test the people who show up and to see what rights they do know. We have four phases. This is the global Know Your Rights around the Children's Conference. And then the second one is about special ed IEPs. The third one is about the school-to-prison pipeline. And the fourth phase will be about we're going to have panels about opting out of testing, miscellaneous stuff, you know, whatever we come up. So for the years, we'll have three, you know, different, the phases will be about 3 months. So we're working on the children. We'll be working on the children's convention and the around children's rights global wide.
I love that you're doing that, framing global-wide. It as the global issue.
We're going to start global and then federally, state, and then locally.
All right, because we are part of the world, and people from all over the world are coming here to be our wonderful new friends and neighbors and family. So, and again, that's the Know Your Rights in Education. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. at Concordia University Library, 2811 Northeast Holman Street. And that's it for our show.
Room 108.
That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, Sheila Warren and Deb Mayer from the Portland Parents Union. Find them on Facebook. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Kush, the studio dog. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
All right.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really. Is that all that glitter is gold? After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
Stand up for.
We're about a half hour away from Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering discusses the options for Greece in the future and how that relates to the future of Europe. At 10 o'clock, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And then at 10:15, Flashpoints, reaction to the Iran nuclear deal from journalist Robert Perry, a look at Israel's renegade nuclear program and why it's not talked about in the U.S. press. And we take a personal look at the implications of the Iran deal for Iranians in the U.S. and Iran. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with local writer Lydia Yuknovich about her new novel, The Small Backs of Children. That's all coming up right after Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. And that is coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 17th annual Pickathon, July 31st through August 2nd. Pickathon is 3 days and 7 stages of performances by a variety of bands such as Tune Yards, Shabazz Palaces, Ty Segall, Leon Bridges, Freak Walk.